Today's episode of The Shift on R2C2 is brought to you by Fanatics. Fanatics has the world's largest collection of officially licensed fan gear. I actually buy a lot of cool stuff from them. They're the official on-field provider of Major League Baseball uniforms. They're also exclusive providers of the authentic MLB postseason division, league, and World Series champions locker room tees. Shop for all the leagues, teams, and players you love online at Fanatics.com. Fanatics officially licensed everything. And now, The Shift on R2C2.
You know, I hear guys saying, hey, you know, you think you can get to 700? I'm like, hey, I never thought I was going to get to 500 or 600. Yeah. I never think about it. And look, I got 650 plus. I'm like, you know, if a 700 comes, it's great. But if it doesn't come, then, hey.
650 pretty damn good.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to look at my career and say, damn, man, I didn't get to 700.
What's up, everybody? We back. Another week of R2C2.
That's right, man. And another special episode of The Shift.
Yes.
Our partnership with the MLBPA. And, I mean, see, we have a legend with us today, man.
Legend.
This is such a pleasure, such a treat. Albert Pujols in the building. Albert, thank you for being with us, man.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
The Shift.
Did you guys see the note about your matchup last night and how rare it is to have a guy with 3,000 strikeouts facing someone with 650 home runs?
No. Well, I'm pretty sure one thing that I can tell you, I have a share in that one, in that list, in his list.
Yeah. And I definitely got a share in those 650, so nah, it's crazy.
No, it's amazing, you know, it's a battle, man. I've been following this guy for years, you know. We've facing each other, you know, when he was in Cleveland and in Milwaukee, you know, and now here with the Yankees. It's an amazing career, you know, future Hall of Fame here. And I'm just glad, you know, that I can say to my kids and to my grandkids, you know, one day when he goes in the hole, hey, I was able to face this guy. And it's unbelievable. You know, a guy never complains. He gets the ball every fifth day out there and just get the best, you know, a really competitor, a true competitor, you know, in this game. And it's hard to find guys like him. And what an amazing career, you know. And I want to take the chance now that I have it in front to congratulate you, man.
Appreciate it, bro.
What an amazing career, you know, for you and your family, man. And good luck and the next chapter in your life, man. But I enjoy, even I'm far away, you know, but I always enjoy, you know, the true competitor that you always have been and the role model that you have been for this game. Because a lot of people, you know, only look at us, what we do in the field, what we accomplish, you know. But the most important thing, what you do with a platform that the Lord has given you about giving back in the community and helping others. And I think that's huge, you know, and we can't take that for granted. So congratulations. Well done, brother.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. That was awesome. And, you know, us being the same, coming up really together, you know what I'm saying? And me being able to watch your career and, you know, already a Hall of Famer, you know, I mean, what you've done in this game has been amazing. And a great role model to follow to myself. Like I said, you know, us competing against each other, but growing up
yes,
together and,
yes,
and kind of
yeah.
feeding off each other and watching yeah. what each other is doing. It's been
making Nike trips.
Yeah.
knowing each other better.
It's been crazy, man. It's been, it's definitely been a blessing, man. It's been a blessing for our friendship. And I thank you for everything.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning those numbers and your matchups together.
Yeah.
So Albert, you're right. C did strike you out 5 times in his career.
Yes.
And Albert, you have gone yard against C. So you both are in each other's books then when it comes to those stats.
Yeah, well, I think he got my share more. You know, I'm in his book, if you want to call that more, you know. So, you know, but the thing is, bro, when you face guys like him, that caliber, you know, and an amazing career, you know, those guys, they rarely give you one pitch to hit. And when they do, bro, you just need to take advantage of, you you know, last night I was able to get a base hit, but you know, you can see it right there. He's probably not throwing to the level that he used to throw back then, but bro, when he was out there in the mound, he's still intimidated, you know, and he still know how to pitch. And I think you know, people think that because you throw 95, 100 miles per hour, it's easy to go out there and take the mound and pitch. You know, guys like him, they had that velocity before, and now towards the end of his career, still pitching, you know, to the level and performing the way that he has performed. It's amazing. I mean, this is not about how hard you throw. It's how smart, how you can study the hitters and send in the hitter, how you can go out there and do your homework and then face him last night. So, a true comparative, man, and it's awesome. You know, I think those are the things that I'm pretty sure that he's going to be missing, but he's going to be enjoying his family more often now. He's probably going to have next year in 2020 a really solid Homer with his family,
vacation
that he can that he can travel. I mean, when was the last time you can say that?
1997.
You know, so
I had a summer off.
So it's just fun.
You know, it's crazy. Last night, I felt myself getting emotional a couple of times. I wouldn't look at you when you got in the box, when I walked off the mound, coming, you know, at that last inning, I got the pop up and I walked off the mound. And then I saw you, like, I purposely didn't look at you, you know what I'm saying? And then I had my head down. The first person I look up, I saw was Dylan. And I was like, damn, like, it's crazy. It's not so much about, like, the game. I think it's the relationship that you have with, you know, different guys and, you know, guys that you see come up. And, you know, like, Dylan's like my little brother, you know what I'm saying? So I miss being around these guys every day and hanging out with my teammates. So that was the most emotional part, like being out there. You know, I mean, I've done it for 19 years. You know, you know, the aches and pains, different surgeries and everything. You know, we go through in the off season to get out there. So I'm a little sick of that. But as far as like the
memories,
the memories and the guys and the, you know, the relationships that you know. If that's what I cherish the most, and I think I'll miss the most.
No, it was pretty special last night. You know, I went through, obviously, early this year, you know, when I went to St. Louis for the first time in 8 years.
Man, that was emotional for me.
It was crazy, bro. And then to see that last night, it was like deja vu for me, you know, because I had that experience in St. Louis. And, you know, you need to give a lot of credit to these fans, man, the way that they obviously stayed last night for you and just really woke you off pretty much. And that's what true fans do, man. You know, it doesn't matter. That's what true fans, they appreciate. They appreciate. I'm pretty sure the Yankees fan appreciate that, you know, your whole career. So, and you know, it's not over. I mean, you guys are in the playoff, and you know, I'm pretty sure your goal and your dream and your goal is to try win a championship this year and walk out, you know, with a big door open, you know, having a trophy. And you know, good luck to you guys. You know, you guys having a great team, and hopefully, I know you guys bent up a little bit, lose a couple of arm in there and injury, but if you stay healthy, man, you guys are gonna be pretty dangerous in the playoff.
It's been crazy. You guys been dealing with a lot of injuries too, huh? It's been nuts. It's how many tough injuries we dealt with, man. I've never seen anything like what we've had. I mean, even so many, you guys have so many big guys go down, man. That makes it hard, man.
It's really frustrating because you know, our GM and our front office and our management, they work their butt off to put a quality team together that they believe that is going to perform in 2019. And then, you know, less than 10 games into a season, you lose three or four guys that you really count on it. You know, I mean, now Thursday, you know, we lost J-Up and then Upton, you know, and Zach Kosar early in the year. Oh, Shohei Ohtani, you know, just last week with a knee surgery. It's hard because you expecting guys to step up, you know, but they never used to be in that situation, you know. So it's tough. You asking young guys, you know, to do that, but it's hard, man. It's hard, and I think that's something in the game that you cannot control. Injuries, man. I mean, when you out there playing every day, I mean, you can do whatever you can in the workout room, train hard in the off season, but man, when you go every day 162 games, you know, you just pray every day that you don't get hurt, that you stay healthy. And it's hard because you're in the field pretty much. You take the ball every fifth day, but then during those 3 days, you're doing your bullpen, you're working out and getting yourself ready for your next start. For me, it's the same thing. The days that I don't play, I actually lift weights and then have
taking
to
swings in
take
the
swings and do all that. So it's really going all the time and really active. Yes, we've been doing it for so long, and we be able to do it for so long like that with the success that we had, because the workout that we have put together in the offseason. So, but it's tough. It's frustrating, you know, when you lose guys like that.
That's why it's been so amazing to watch what we've been able to do with, you know, Miguel going down, Andujar going down three, you know, a couple of days into the season, and Gio Urshela stepping up, you know. Yes. G's, I mean, you know, Giancarlo's only played 10 games for us, you know what I'm saying? You know, Sockman stepping up. Like, these guys have been huge, and you can't expect guys to do what these guys have done, you know what I'm saying? And but it's just been amazing. We're in this position that we're in because of all the young guys that stepped up and just not did what the guys that were hurt can do. They just filled their role, you know what I'm saying, and not trying to do too much.
But the thing is that was the same thing when I was in St. Louis, bro. Those young guys, we were not asking too much, but those guys step up to the level, you know, we were even shocking, you know. But I'm pretty sure in your clubhouse, you guys make those guys so comfortable, the young players, you know, hey, you belong here, you know, you're here because you're gonna help out this year to win a championship. And it's the same thing, you know, our clubhouse here with the Angels. I'm like, those guys, the relationship, whether you come from another team or whatever, it starts in spring training, and we know sooner or later those guys are gonna help us to win during the course of the season,
for sure.
And you know, I remember when I was in San Luis in 2011, we have a bunch of injuries, but those guys step up. You know, the guy like the John Jay, the Dave Free, Daniels the Car. So guys that really people don't expect thing. And all of a sudden, those are the guys sometimes in the playoff that really win the MVP and all that, you know, because nobody's expecting those guys to step up. And then they give them the opportunity and have a great series, you know, and all that, help us to win. But it takes more. I know we have carrying 25 players in the roster, but at the end of the day, you know, it takes more than that, including the coaches and then the front office and everybody, from the bad boy to the clubhouse, all those guys that really work so hard that people don't get to see, that they're behind the scene to pretty much let us go out there and play and make it easy for us. And you know, we need to give a lot of credit to those guys too.
I was just saying, I always tell guys in spring training, you know, when we sitting in that room, that pitcher's room, when we first get in there, everybody in here is going to pitch in the big leagues on this team. So be ready. You know what I'm saying? I mean, no matter from, you know, the youngest guy to the oldest guy, we use everybody. So if you're in this room, you got a chance to pitch. So be ready, man.
Yes.
You know, for both of you guys, because you both, you know, you've won championships, you've achieved personal accolades, you've been, you know, leaders in the community and leaders in the clubhouse. See, and Albert, do you guys remember when you first felt comfortable being that voice that you're describing, being like you in the pitcher's room and what you're describing, see, and Albert, you being a leader and looking around and saying, hey, you know, it's going to take more than just, you know, the five stars on this team. We need everybody if we're going to do this year. Do you remember like when it was in your careers where you felt like, hey, I can take on this role, I can be this voice?
Yeah, I think for me, it was back in St. Louis, and I think it all comes with guys that we have around, guys that really take us under the wing. I mean, I got guys like Mark McGuire, Gene Emmons, you know, Scott Rowland, Placido Polanco, Edgar Renteria, Fernando Viña, Matt Morris, Daryl Kyle. I mean, I can name the list up and down, but those guys really made me comfortable. I say early, you know, you have to treat those guys like they belong here. And, you know, they knew I was the youngest player in the team. They knew that I was going to help that ball club in 2001 to win and to hopefully go to the playoff. And they made me comfortable. They say, bro, you don't have to be a superstar to be a leader. And that's what I tell these guys right now, because everybody's looking like the Mike Trout, the best player in the game, even though he's a leader in our clubhouse, you know. But, you know, you need to look like the David Fletcher and guys like that. They're really go at it every day, and we respect them, you know, and they care, you know, they wear that jersey with honor every day. So you don't have to be a superstar in a clubhouse to be a leader, you know. You just need to earn that respect the way that you go about it every day with your workout, the way you respect people in the clubhouse, and the way you respect your teammates. And that's something that I learned on a young age really, really quick, because I was around so many veteran guys. I mean, I remember when I was in Houston. First of all, I remember in 2001 when I broke camp, I wasn't even going to be in the team. They just took me for some exhibition game to go to Seattle and Oakland. And Daryl Kyle told me, don't be afraid to make the All-Star game. you know. And I remember I was one of the last guys to get, and I'm like, wow, that wasn't that's the pressure right there, you know. Well, he told me that, and then right in there, like, I felt afraid that I felt the present. I felt like I belong, and then all the guys just rallying around me and surround me, and there's really taught me the right way. And I think that's the thing that we wanna, you know, since it's last year, this year, my hopefully, you know, in 2 years, if I can stay healthy, and that's the mark that we wanna left behind, you know, just to train these kids and teach these kids, you know. We don't want a babysitter because that's not our job. We have a job to do. But we wanna then to take this game serious and don't take anything for granted. So that way the younger that they can learn how to do that, the better success that they're gonna have. And hopefully, if we can encourage some of those young guys and they can pick it, you know that the next generation after that, they're gonna do the same thing. And hopefully that's how you build guys like CeCe and myself. I mean, it wasn't just we wake up one day and all of a sudden, you know, we were like, yeah, we got it. We got to figure it out. No, it took a lot of work, you know, from all the guys that really pour into. And I'm pretty sure that CeCe has done that in his career. And I'm pretty sure I've done that in my career, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For me, it in Cleveland, you know, started. For me, I wanted to be a leader so bad when I was young. I had to work at it. I had to learn how to kind of lead and you know, try to do it the right way, I guess. You know, when I was, you know, my first couple of years, I wanted to be like the ace, the guy right away. And it just wasn't coming, you know, like I thought it should. And it just took me a while. I had to step back and you know, learn how to, you know, hang out with people, learn how to lead people and lead by example and go out and be a good teammate and
learn from your mistakes.
Leave it out in the field. Yeah. Learn from everything. So I think it took me a little while to figure that out. I always had great veterans around me. I had Ellis Burks, you know, Kenny Lofton, Robbie Alomar, Omar Vizquel, you know, Jim Tomey. These guys were awesome for me. Mm-hmm. And they taught me really how to treat people, you know, and treat the young guys. And, you know, the way our clubhouse is now is the way they treated me, you know. Mm-hmm. I told Ellis Burks the other day, you know, he bought me my first suit in the big leagues. And all these guys now, Domingo Herman, Seve, all these guys, I bought all these guys their first suit. And now they turn around and, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like paying it forward and kind of, you know, passing it down. So, yeah, but I think I really had to learn how to lead in, you know, in my mid-20s in Cleveland, for sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why I love our podcast, Albert. And C and I know this because we get to experience this all the time. Mm-hmm. But for our audience, and right now, I want to put myself in their place. Like, we're listening to two Hall of Famers just rap about going through the game. You know, it's what makes what C and I do here so beautiful. It's like when you get this opportunity, I just love hearing you guys go through these stories. And I do have to tell you this. You know, I said the 3,000 strikeout, 650 home run matchups in baseball history. Well, I just have to give you the other names because it's amazing, guys. It was last night with you two, okay? The other times it's happened in baseball history, Bob Gibson facing Hank Aaron,
jeez,
Randy Johnson against Barry Bonds, and Greg Maddux against Barry Bonds.
That's crazy.
Not a bad
pretty
group.
Pretty cool.
That's insane, man. Bob Gibson and Hank Aaron just gave me chills. Like,
right?
You grew up listening to those names.
It's pretty special.
Well,
I grew up, you know, with Buck Gibson and St. Louis telling me, hey, man, back in the day, you know, if I would have faced you, I would have thrown you up and in. And if you look at me, I would have hit you the next time back. You know, no, it's awesome.
That's cool.
Know?
I always had good relationships with all the older players that was always around. Bob Feller was always one guy that I was always really close when I got a chance to see some of his stats. We got similar numbers too, and you know, he just really like gave me the mentality of, he used to always ask me like, how many games you gonna win this year? And I'd be like, oh, I want to win 20. He'd be like, well, how many you gonna start? You know, 30 to 35. Well, what you gonna fucking lose 15? Like, no, you gonna win all these motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just really gave me that, like, go out every start and I'm gonna win this, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna win this game. And it kind of started with Bob Feller and just a lot of I'm grateful for a lot of those old relationships that I have with, you know, the Yogi Berras and, you know, Gator now and So it's
just cool. It's just cool to have those guys. When I was in San Luis, you know, just to see a Stan Musial, you know, come through that room and just, man, light up, smile, you know, the Buck Gibson, the Lou Brock, Red Shanning.
That's amazing.
You know, I mean, all those guys, just to sit down and talk. You know, I remember, you know, I asked a question. We were like in the training room and I asked Red Shanning, I'm like, Red, like, back in the day, do you used to have like six fields like this to practice it? Like, no, you crazy? I'm like, you know, and for the rookies, we had one field, first of all. And for the rookie, you had to wait until all the guys hit and then you can hit afterwards. Like, you know, and look at it. They used to do that back in the day. And I mean, we are so blessed that we're playing in this generation like this. And then the fields are better and all that. I mean, I sit down and talk to those guys and just they used to tell me a story. I was like, wow, that's crazy. I'm like, there's no way that I'd be able to perform, you know.
Those conditions,
and those guys did it. It's amazing. That's what's so beautiful, you know, to sit down and just talk to them about the bus ride, the, you know, the competitor that they were, and you know, and give you shields, man. Like, just think about that, man, and it's so awesome. So I'm blessed, not just with the great career that I've been having, you know, in my life, but to be able to be around great people that love the game of baseball and that really taught me so much.
Albert, can you remember an interaction with either a legend in the game or let's just say anyone famous in this world? Doesn't have to be baseball related, but like where you felt truly in awe, truly starstruck.
Well, for me, it's got to be Stan the Man, bro.
Yeah.
And San Luis. I mean, the first time that I got a chance to meet him and just talk to him a little bit about hitting, it was just amazing, you know, because when I got to San Luis, I didn't know much until, you know, I make the team. And then, you know, for opening day, for me, it's like San Luis is like one of the best tradition that they have with the cars and you know, for opening day. It's just unbelievable. And having those guys, all the Hall of Fame line up, wearing the red jacket. So the first time that I saw Stan, man, it was like, what? Stan Musial, you know, like, you know. And then later on, we became really close friends. He came to a lot of my events and just, you know, pretty much every other week, you know, he would have come to the clubhouse when we were home and just we would just start talking and just talk baseball, man. That was it. And he asked me about, you know, one of the coolest story that I have. It was he picked my bat one time. And at that time, I was using 34, 32.5. And he told me, he's like, this is a two pick. I'm like, how can you hit with this? There's no way I can hit with this. So stuff like that is a cool story, you know, just being around those guys. But I would say it has to be Stan Musial.
Oh, that's amazing, man. I mean, I could see, because then, like, if you have Stan Musial there as a resource, right, you got to be like, well, can I go back to him? Like, can I keep asking him about him,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You want to keep going back to him. You know, you guys have seen so much. This may seem sort of like a very just general question, but because of all you've accomplished in the baseball you've played, I'm just wondering, see, I don't know if I've asked you even ever like this, but just if I was going to say, who are the best players each of you have competed against, who would you say? You know, it doesn't have to be one, but if you think of like one or two, you're just like, man, that guy was filthy. That guy was nasty. That guy was such a tough out. Who would you guys think about first?
Man, you know who comes to my mind because I played against him so much? It was Carlos Beltran. And I think people don't realize how good he was in Kansas City.
Yes.
I mean, he did everything. He ran. I mean, he played the base. I mean, you know, ran the bases well. He played defense. He hit on both sides.
You know, they're talking about five tools. He has his tools.
He had everything.
He knew how to play the game.
Yeah, he was one of the guys when we played Kansas City, I was like, fuck, man, I got to face Carlos today. Yeah. And then if I walk him, he's still in second and third. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was always rough and tough for me to face.
For me, I think, you know, it had to be, you know, facing those guys, too. I mean, facing guys like Greg Maddux, you know, and John Small going into Atlanta, you know, guys that I really grew up watching and now I'm facing. I was like, wow, this is crazy. And just the comparison, I say early, you know, like when you face guy like CeCe, John Small, Greg Maddux, I mean, those guys, they might give you a pitch to hit, and you better take advantage, get a base hit, and you might just do the whole series. I remember going into Atlanta early when those guys, you had to face Matt O'Glove and John Small. I mean, I'm like, man, if I can get two hit in this series, yes, I got a class, you know? So those guys, and I think early for me, I think Todd Helton. Every time I went to Colorado, man, that was one of the sweetest swing from the left side that I had seen.
And just hitting the ball all over the
unbelievable
park too.
I mean, when I went to Colorado, you remember, I played right, left field, third base, first base, everywhere. And I remember playing in the outfield. When I left there for a three-game series, like, my hamstring was so sore from those guys hit a ball in the gap. They were automatic triple. Larry Walker and Todd Helton. And it was unbelievable. One of the sweetest swing. But also so competitive, you know. And later on, 2004, 2005, I had the opportunity and the privilege to play with Larry Walker, you know, one of the toughest guys that I ever played against and with.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the numbers speak for itself, yeah. Buddy. The numbers speak for itself. So,
Albert, C has told us a story before where he first, and C, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Harold Reynolds texting you who first brought up 3,000 strikeouts to you, right?
Yeah, 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins, yeah.
Yeah, he was the one who kind of put it on your radar. Albert, have you ever had someone like kind of been unaware of, you know, I don't know, a record or milestone you're coming upon, and then someone reaches out to you and you're like, oh, wait, that's kind of cool. Like, I want to hit that number.
Yes. You know, I think the 650 and 650 doubles and 650 homers, I think that's pretty cool. That's something that, you know, I wasn't even aware, and one of the guys, actually was one of the guys in our clubhouse, Shane Bennett, who's really a brilliant guy. He's know about number. He's like, dude, do you know that you are the first player down now? Like, what? No, like, I don't know, CZ, but myself, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard because we aware, you know, what's around. We aware. But it's not like we come into the ballpark and say, I'm going to pass this guy.
Yeah.
I'm going
to do this. I never played the game for numbers anyway.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
It's
never
about winning and building a relationship.
That's,
you know,
all
and
it was.
And the success that we have, thank God, is because we never thought about that. We never put that pressure on ourselves.
I think if I would have started my career saying I wanted 3,000 strikeouts, I would have never got here.
No, no.
You know what I'm saying?
Because you would have tried so hard, you know. So I think sometimes I'm talking to the media and they get frustrated because they really want me to talk to them about my accomplishment, I tell them, I'm like, God, that's not what I play, man. I play to help this organization, the San Luis Cardinals organization, the Angels organization now, to win. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters the most. And then if I do that, believe it or not, I'm going to put numbers.
Everything's going to be there at the end anyway.
Yes.
If you plan for the right reasons, we start winning, your number's going to be
yes.
there. We're
yes.
winning because of my numbers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
and then you're going to have plenty of time when you're done playing
to
look back and say, wow, you know. But like for me, when I really end the game, I really try to stay focused every day. And listen, we are human, and it's really easy to get caught up into that. So that's why really I'm really good on blocking all that stuff that's going to take that distraction for me to help myself to prepare for the game. So I really try to block all that. You know, I hear guys saying, hey, you know, you think you can get to 700? I'm like, hey, I never thought I was going to get to 500 or 600. Yeah. I never think about it. And look, I got 650 plus. I'm like, you know, if a 700 comes, it's great. But if it doesn't come, then hey.
650 is pretty damn good.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm not going to look at my career and say, damn, man, I didn't get to 700. I'm like, you know, I think, you know, God, I think the Lord would judge me for that, you know, because it's been an unbelievable career.
Yeah, I think it's hard, man, when – I don't know. Baseball is different. It's hard to play for numbers, man. It's just really hard to do. And I think the guys that have the best numbers and amass all these, you know, accomplishments and awards and stuff, I think they could tell you that they don't play for none of that stuff. And it just kind of happens, I guess.
That'll take care
right,
of yourself.
Like, I would almost think it's easier to pile up those numbers when you're playing on a team that's in it throughout the entire season, right?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, this last year, you know what I'm saying? We've been going all through this with me my last year, whatever. It's been easy to deal with all that because we trying to go out and win a baseball game every day. Like, last night, yeah, it was my last start, but we trying to clinch. We're trying to actually really win the game. So, it takes the focus off it, you know, being about one person, which is I'm fine with.
You
man.
Hit it right there, dude. I'm because fine with this that, is man. This is not about CeCe. This is not about Albert Pujols. You have 25 other guys plus the call up in September, you know, and it's about a team. We a team. This is not a, like one single accomplishment. You know, you need guys for Hank. He need a catcher to throw the ball, you know, and guys to make defense. For myself, I need guys to get on base for me to drive and all that to be able to reach those milestones that I have. So it's really a group, you know, it's not one individual. So I think for me, I always try to take the spotlight, the focus. And this is from day one, knowing that, hey, this is about the organization. This is about our team. How can we get better? And hopefully at the end of the day, try to accomplish what we all want, all 30 teams are going into spring training when we break camp is to win a championship. So I try to do that. The best that I can, you know, every day.
Now, sure. Albert, you were, I mean, it's not like you were the first pick of the draft, right? I mean, you were a, you're a 13th round pick, and initially, I believe.
In 98 or 99?
99.
99. 402. You could, wow, how about that? I think 401 people feel pretty crappy about themselves. You know, I'm thinking this, so Albert, like, at what point, twofold, like at one point did you realize as you're going through the minors, like, oh, like, you know, I'm gonna mash here, like I'm gonna do my thing, or did you always have that belief? And at one point did you start to see like the organization realize, whoa, we have something like really special in this guy?
Well, for me, like you said, I think being drafted 402 in the 13th round by the Cardinals. By the way, let me go back a little bit. I didn't even know that I was getting a scouting by the Cardinals. I believe really that I was going to get drafted either by the Royals, by the Tampa Bay Rays, or the New York Mets or Pittsburgh. Those were the 14, like, I built a relationship with the scout. You know, one of my best friends who passed away early this year, who's one of my mentors, Fernando Arango, he used to be the scout for the Tampa Bay Double Rays. And then 1999, he took me to a workout down to Tropicana Field. And I did a tryout, and they told me, hey, man, we're going to pick you probably in the first two or three round, which, you know, my encouragement to young players right now, and they're a high school kid, that they have a scout or people telling them to that they're going to get drafted in the first round, second round. Don't believe it.
Don't listen to all that, man.
Just go about it by your business, work out, and whatever happened, happened. Because what that did to me, I kind of like it put me in a place that, you know, listen, everybody wants to get drafted. So I did at the end of the day. But I remember going to that draft year in 1999. It was so tough because I was waiting for that call. I'm like, yes, I'm going to be probably one of the top pick, whatever, in the country and this and that. It never happened. So, you know, first round, eighth round, all the rounds came. Boston call in the ninth round. They want to draft me, but they didn't want to pay for my school. And I was like, listen, school is more important for me. They let me go. Then the New York Mets call. And at that time, I had an agent that I guess was asking too much for that round. So they passed me along. And then the Cardinals came in the 13th round, you know. But I think for me, looking all that back, it's like, man, it's a blessing.
God
always has a plan for you, and you just need to follow. You just need to listen and follow. Because maybe if I would have gone to Tampa, if I would have gone with the Mets, or if I would have gone with Boston, I wouldn't have that career, you know.
Nah, they wouldn't have been able to, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, you know, when I got drafted, man, it was really frustrated, but I took that. And I remember, as of right now, I can close my eyes, leaving my house, telling my wife, I'll be back, because I was so crying. I was so frustrated, you know, because I didn't get drafted, you know, in the first 5 or 10 rounds, whatever. And I left home, and I turned the radio, man, and I think it was George Brett's brother that was on a radio show. He calling, which, you know, George Brett is I'm number one fan. I mean, being in Kansas City, and, you know, he's the king over there in Kansas City. And he was talking a story about his brother, telling him, I'm like, George, you better sign and you're going to prove them that they're wrong, and your money, you're going to make it in the big leagues. Don't worry about the draft and all that. So I don't know if that was true, but I heard that story that his brother say, man, and that was the sign that I say. So I turned around. I went back to my wife and I told her, you know what? I'm going to go and sign, and I'm going to go play with the Cardinals, and I'm going to take that and use it, you know, put that as a chip on my shoulder, and I'm going to try to play 3 years in the minor league. If I don't make it to the big leagues, then I quit the game, which at that time, wow. I was so frustrated. I was lying. You know, it's probably was a lie, but I was so frustrated and I was so hurt because I listened to so many people telling me, you were going to go, and it didn't happen.
And you know what? At that time, not to cut you, but you think that's your baseball career.
Yeah.
Like getting drafted is your career. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't see past anything other than what round you get drafted in. So like that's a huge deal for you. You know what I'm saying? At that age.
Exactly. And I told my wife, you know, 3 years. Literally, you know it, man. I only took me 1 year and I was in the big league the next year.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
And it's amazing, you know. Like I tell people that story, they don't believe it. They're like, what? And you know, now you see guys getting drafted, they rush it through the season, they have success, better player, good arm, good talent, and then 1 year they're in the big leagues. You know, back then 1999, man, to get to the big leagues in 1 year, only 1 year in the minor, it didn't happen too many times. So for me to do that, man, that was just a great accomplishment. And you know, something that I give God the glory, and my families, they stand behind me and always pushing me, my coaches, you know, from the minor league.
That year in 2000, where'd you start?
I started in Peoria, Illinois.
In Peoria,
and then I went to High A, Potomac.
Potomac, that's where we crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Coco was on that team, right?
Yeah, Coco, Victor Martinez.
That's where we crossed. Yeah,
Victor was there.
Because I was in Kinston. And
yeah,
Kinston. Yeah, and playing against Potomac.
Then Kinston used to have that field that you had the wire in the middle of the field? Like power line wire, like in
right
the middle
across,
of the field?
Yeah,
so that's where we, in Potomac.
That's where we crossed paths. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I know it's a long story, man. I mean, we'd be here all day, but it's just stuff like that I take this opportunity, you know, and CeCe can agree with me, just to tell those high school kids that have the talent and the ability. Listen, you don't have to be a first-round pick. No. You don't have to be a second-round pick. You can be 400 and two in the draft, and still, maybe you don't going to get the opportunity that a first-rounder will get. But, man, if you work hard and you show the organization that you belong and you can get to the next level and get to the B-League and help that ball club to win, they will give you that opportunity. So what I'm trying to say with this is like never take anything for granted. You know, I mean, yes, it's great to have a great check and signing bonus, you know, but if you have a great career, you're going to make your money at the end of the day in this level.
You know, Albert,
that's a great story for the high school kids, whoever out there listening to this, for sure.
Amazing. See, I mean, Albert, you're going to have to come back on sometime, man.
For sure.
Well, CeCe know where he can find me.
You are an incredible storyteller, and this is such a treat for us and for our audience. Real quickly, I know you got to run with these episodes with The Shift in our partnership with the MLB Players Association here on R2C2. We like to just end the episodes asking, what do you love most about this game, and what's one thing you'd like to see changed about the game? So I just want to give you the opportunity to ask you that and answer that before we let you get back to work here.
Well, two things. I don't love the ship because that thing hurts everybody.
The actual fucking ship.
Yes, that hurts everybody, buddy. I don't like that. You know how many hits, man, I've been robbed.
We gotta rename this podcast episode.
I don't like that, bro. I don't like that. You know, I think for me, I don't know. It's just so much because it's just a different generation right now. You know, obviously they're trying to change so much again. I just wish that the game can go back to where it was when I came up. You know, the umpire get control, the call. I know they're spending a lot of money on the instant replay and all that. But one thing that I can say, those umpires, man, they work hard every day to try to get better. And I know that a lot of people, they take a lot of criticism for people and all that, but they're human. At the end of the day, they may mistake. sake. So if it's for me, one thing that I can, those are the two things, the shift and just let the umpire, man. If it's a homer, it's a homer. That's it. If it was a foul ball, hey, forget about it, you know. So, but like switching the first and third, and I know next year they're going to add a couple of more things. It just really, the game is changing, and I think it's taking a lot of fun from the game, you know. So, but I would say as of right now, those are the two things that I really think about it, the shift, and then just let the umpire have the control, you know, to continue to call the game, you know, because they work hard every day, you know, to be the best. And they make mistakes like we do, you know, with base running and error and striking out. So that's the way it goes. And I know at the end of the day, the game can be long, whatever it is. But you know what? The true fan, it doesn't matter if they take 10 hours, man. They come and support the team, you know, and hopefully see their home team win. And that's what we play for, you know, to hopefully bring a smile on the fans and to, you know, hopefully they can enjoy a great game.
Albert, absolutely tremendous stuff. Cannot thank you enough for doing this. And, you know, we like to end each episode by asking our guests to remind our audience to rate, review, and subscribe to R2C2. So would you do us the honor of just imploring our audience to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast?
So you want me to say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, guys, please, if you're listening out there, to rate, review,
and subscribe.
And subscribe, please.
Yeah,
so this is, hey, guys, this is the most fun that I had this year. I'm telling you, man. This is cool, you know. Sitting with CZ here, man, a future Hall of Fame, with amazing career. You know, we know each other for a long time. We battle each other back and forth. And, you know, this is pretty special. So thank you very much. You can have me on anytime you want. CZ got my number. All he needs to do, send me a test. And, you know, I'm on, man. So thank you so much, guy. Bless.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, Albert. That means the world. Continued success, man.
Thank you so much.